Welcome to your Daily Dose with Bob and Nick. Today's episode is all about storytelling, but not your standard garden variety storytelling. We're talking about storytelling for local nonprofit causes, storytelling that unleashes young people's imaginations and true selves, and storytelling that involves fake recipes. It covers a wide range of stuff within one amazing topic. We hope it leaves you wanting to tell your story. Check it out. Oh, wait a second. You know something? Leave it. I know there's a Tom Walker. I know that song. And I listened to it when I was working on a campaign for homeless youth, because I came up with a campaign that was Leave a Light On. Because you know when you send your kids out into the night, you leave a light on.
Because you're like, I probably want you to come back.
Exactly. Which is a sad concept when you consider applying it to youth homelessness, because they have no one leaving a light on for them, you know. So that was kind of the angle, though, was that you feel bad when there's someone who has no one to leave a light on for them.
I like that. That sounds like a pretty good angle.
It was a pretty good angle, although I think I'm going to stop doing campaigns for organizations, because it seems like the last few, they love it, they say they love it, and then they just don't use it. And I feel like, well, I mean, why did I go through that if you're not actually going to use it?
Okay, so I guess the question is, why didn't they use it?
In most cases, I think it gets down to pushing the politics of actually getting enough people to say yes to it.
Okay.
I've helped in a number of instances come in and presented to their boards and stuff so that the power of the pitch wouldn't be lost in the translation.
So it's a creative buy-in.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a strategic and creative buy-in. And this is the thing. When I do, you know, creative work for folks, it's always based in what's the strategy? Well, how am I going to move the mark one way or the other, whether it's awareness, getting someone to donate money, stuff like that. So that's the foundation of it. And then we get all crazy creative around it to see how do we push those atoms the best way.
Well, because you also have to break through the noise of everything else that's going on in the world.
Well, and this is the thing. That's what demands. I actually love this fact about the world today. And yet, sadly, I see too many people just doing the same stuff. A lot of people are just tracing the lines of other people because that's how they think it's done. As opposed to really charting a path and doing something different, taking a chance, being afraid. I was just joking with someone I'm doing a project with. I'm so sick of fundraising galas and 10Ks and golf tournaments. It's like, do something different. If you want me to give you money, show me that you're different than these other places.
I think Page 15, they're doing something actually tomorrow. And I think they're doing something fun. They've got a theme. It's called Mixtape. Okay. And it's going to be like, I think this one is 90s or 80s.
Okay, so tell everyone what Page 15
is. Page 15 is a great literacy program for local kids, especially in the Paramore area, but they also do a lot of summer camps.
Nice.
So Mina actually went to a couple of their writing summer camps and just loved it. And just the idea of getting kids writing more and the ability to communicate and the ability to tell a story that's inside of them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not about grammar and making sure that the Oxford comma is being used correctly and all that stuff, and even spelling. Like, it's just about putting out that communication.
I love that concept, because I think too often the beautiful thought gets crushed by the syntax.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I want to know how to do things right.
Sure.
But at the same time, a lot can be communicated without any of that. I mean, look at Cormac McCarthy, The Road. Have you ever read this book?
No.
Okay. You need to just...
I heard it's super uplifting.
It is one of the most depressing books. I read it at night before I went to bed, which was a bad decision, because it's got some of the scariest moments and some of the saddest moments I've ever read in a book. But dude doesn't use punctuation and doesn't use capitalization in his writing of this book. It's all stripped down, and you get to see how much can be communicated without all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, obviously he knows how to construct a sentence and he knows how to tell a story, but I was very impressed by that when you consider that the book really moved me, and it was a little difficult to read it at first. I had to get into the rhythm of recognizing I'm not going to have the clearest notes of when one thing begins and one thing ends,
right,
which kind of is the brilliance of doing that way, I think. You're like, well, why does it have to be discrete sentences? Why can't it be one run-on thought?
I can't even imagine what that would translate to for an audiobook, but as a reading experience and trying to convey like this chaos on the page.
Yeah.
I think that would be really interesting.
I want to listen to that book now.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty curious about that.
That's very interesting.
I mean, I don't want to listen to the whole thing because it sounds, how do you say, sad.
It's super sad. It is super sad. Well, you know the theme of the book. It's the end of the world, basically, and people are eating each other. Another really uplifting book that he wrote was No Country for Old Men.
Sure.
And I happened to pick up that book. I'm walking through a bookstore and I see that, and I had read The Road, and I said, let me just open it and read it. And I go to read a few of the last pages because I know how the story ends. And it's incredible how the movie took the exact dialogue between Anton Chigurh and the wife of the main character. Mm-hmm. I forget what her name was, Earlene or something like that. And it was creepy to read it and remember that and just realize this was just literally written down. And then the director of that movie, the Coen brothers, just blazed it onto the screen exactly the way, like you would see it that way, reading it in the book, and it showed up that way. I was very impressed by that. So it does not happen often. Oh, the other thing I keep running into, maybe I told you about this, Goodfellas. Okay, there's a passage in Goodfellas
in the book,
yes, and the movie, and the book, and the screenplay. Okay, that was like a screenplay. I don't know, it was in the book. That the mob boss, when he made his spaghetti and meatballs in prison, would use a razor. Paulie would use a razor blade to cut the garlic so thin that it literally dissolved in the oil. Okay, I always remembered that line for some reason. Then I had somebody quoting that in a podcast, and I'm like, oh, there's a theme. Okay, then I open up a book that's all foods from movies. I open up the center of that book, and it is prison spaghetti and meatballs, and the quote they've chosen to pull out is that quote. Then I hear from, I don't know who was it, I don't think it was Ray Liotta, but it was somebody else who was really involved with that movie, Goodfellas, and it was Martin Scorsese, actually, who said, that was made up. That's one, you can never cut garlic thin enough that it will dissolve in oil. It just won't happen. It was a made-up concept, but he liked so much how it sounded that we just, included it. So, but that the fact that in three different instances that thing came up in that format makes me think, I gotta make that recipe.
Hey, it's Nick. Thanks for listening. I think we can all agree that the recipe for a good story includes one made-up food fact, Joe Pesci acting like a psychopath, and a super long tracking shot, like the one in Goodfellas in the nightclub that everybody else does now because it's such a beautiful, amazing shot. That's all you need. Why don't more people do this? I could be a filmmaker. Have a great day.